There we go. We were talking Tom Jones before. So Tubbsy plays a little Tom Jones. Representative, now retired Representative, Republican Pat Garofalo is here. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you coming out.
It's an honor to be here. Any excuse I can have to come out to the state fair and pound seven or eight beers before I'm on live radio, that seems like a good excuse to me. For those listening, I'm kidding. I'm not drinking.
Yes.
Not drinking.
Okay. You just told me that you, because I was having this question before, and our timing is right. I raised the idea, would somebody want to live right near the fair? Would they want, like, there's plenty of nice houses around here. There are plenty of nice neighborhoods. But would you want to put up with the 12 days of chaos? Now, you're telling me you grew up as a kid not too far away.
Yeah, so I lived on Canfield until I was in, like, first or second grade. And what I remember most back then was that my mom would not sell or rent parking spaces on our yard or driveway.
That's a rarity.
Yeah, my parents wouldn't do that. And the neighbors kind of thought I was foolish because I remember there were people in the neighborhood, like they had kids. They would pay for all their kids' back-to-school clothing just by parking.
I bet.
And this is back in the late 70s, so you can imagine what the parking rates are now. But what I remember most is we would always get over and walk over here. I think the statute of limitations runs out on this, but like my grandpa was a St. Paul cop, so my mom and I and my dad.
You didn't pay to get in, did you?
I didn't pay to get in, never. And then we would come over here and walk through, and we'd just walk around. And then our family was big in auto racing, so they used to have the automobile racing.
Absolutely.
And it was actually one of the most successful shows they had. It's really a shame that they got rid of it, but a sign of the times, I guess. But it was some great racers back then, and every Labor Day weekend we were always out here.
Okay, again, we just were talking about this, so this is great timing. When did the When did the car races end out here? For sure they were out here still in the 90s. When did they end, do you think?
Gosh, I'm
trying. Maybe somebody needs to text me. Because I was mentioning this when Barrera and I were together, and we'd hear it. And now that one of us is real patient, we're a little more patient now. It used to drive us nuts because it'd be going on when we were on the air.
Oh, it was loud.
It was really loud.
Yeah, and I remember one of the things I remember is there's a driver, and maybe people don't know this, but a guy by the name of Dick Trickle.
Oh, yeah.
He was
sure.
Just one of the all-time great,
legend.
And what would happen is guys would be showing up. They'd be testing and tuning all day long. And Trickle was notorious for just showing up. He'd show up at the state fair late. He'd get out, adjust this, dial this, get on the track, no warm-ups, fast time. And the guy owned the place. He was just such an incredible driver. We had a lot of great drivers who were here. I mean, Dale Earnhardt was out here, Rusty Wallace, let's see, who else was there? Mark Martin. Mark Martin
sure.
was here. So
legendary.
Yeah, some great NASCAR drivers used to race out here. It's really, like I said, it's really a shame. I'm sure the neighbors didn't like the noise and stuff.
No,
but for me as a family of auto racing, I thought it was pretty stupid that he got rid of it. But whatever, all you city slickers who can't handle your loud noise, couldn't deal with a couple cars going vroom, vroom for
just
3 hours.
Yeah, just a couple. Okay, for folks who don't know, and there was plenty of coverage of it, why did you step away from the legislature? And now that you have, how do you feel about that decision?
Well, I had done this for, first of all, I forgot to say, Chad, thanks for having me out.
Thank
thanks
you.
For having me out. It's
I appreciate
good,
it.
Good to see you again. I just got out of it because I'd done it for 19 and a half years, and politics is a relay race. It's not meant to be a marathon, so you don't run until you collapse over the finish line. You go out, sprint as fast as you can, and pass the baton to someone else, and so that's what I did. I passed the baton to someone else, and it also helped the fact that I got a new job that was incompatible with the legislature. So that was a variable too. But I was offered and I accepted the role of president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. So that's
we're going to get there because that's something we can.
It's
a lot of
topical.
People can be topical. Okay, well, there's always a lot of talk of term limits. I mean, even this year's. The idea of term limits for the Supreme Court is bumped up again. Do you think the Minnesota legislature, House and Senate, should they have term limits?
I think there should be a modified form of it. I think in Minnesota, we already have an age limit for judges. There's a mandatory retirement
age. Yep.
I think the legislature should have a mandatory retirement age as well. So I know that may not be as forceful as a 6-year limit or a 12-year limit, but I do think that there should be, at the state and federal level, we have age minimums. So I think we should have an age maximum as well. When it gets into specific terms and limiting the amount of terms, it sounds good in practice, and it's something that I've been supportive of, but people need to understand that the consequences of that are you lose your institutional knowledge and you turn more power over to the lobbyists and the political action committees because they stick around. They don't have term limits. So just people need to understand the trade-offs.
That's a fair point. Okay, what age would you set the term limit at?
I think 70.
70?
I think 70 is a good age.
Okay.
Not that there's anything magical about it, but I think it's a round number. Right, and it's at that point where you have generally accepted that that's when you start to see a more aggressive cognitive decline and mental limitations. Doesn't mean they can't be advisory and supportive. Doesn't mean that everyone, when they turn 70, flips a switch, but that's I think that's a prudent course of action.
Okay, for somebody who's listening right now, and let's say they're somewhere in the middle, and they look at you're Republican, but you haven't been shy. You'll criticize your party, too, and you'll certainly be outspoken about Democrats. And they look at both parties and they say, what the you-know-what is happening? Why should I believe in politics? Why should I believe in the politicians at the local, at the state, and federal level? What would you say to that person?
I guess the first thing I would say is you have to believe because you got to participate. If you don't participate, the extremists run things, they take over, and you end up with dumb things happening. So that's the first thing is you have to, even though the top of the ticket right now on both sides of the aisle is definitely leaving something to be lacking. I think we're next to the Republican booth here, but I would say a good portion of the people that are voting for Donald Trump they're not really voting in favor of him. They're voting against Kamala Harris. And likewise,
Don't you think there's a lot of I'm not ever going to vote for Donald Trump, and I'm still skeptical of Harris. Is she the person she's acting like now as a bit more of a centrist, or is she the one who ran in 19 far left? Even though I'm not a Trump supporter, for me, Pat, the guy's loyalty is remarkable. How folks, if they support Donald Trump, they won't waver at all.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. But I think that I think a plurality of his support is the same as the plurality of the Harris support, and that is that they're voting against the other candidate rather than in favor of him. I mean, Harris's positions on the issues they're very far left. If she's elected, she will be the most far left president we've had in American history. Now, I know they sent out press releases saying her positions have changed, but the flip side to that is if you look over at the Republican side with President Trump, you know, his positions, we don't really, it's a difficult time getting him out of them because he's too busy talking about people's crowd sizes and what raises Harris and stupid stuff like that. And so right now there's a lot to be lacking from the two major candidates for president. And that's why the number that I'm going to be watching on election night is what percentage of Minnesotans just refuse to vote for either one of those candidates. Back in 2016, it was a little bit, it was just short of 9%, like basically one out of 11 voters in Minnesota said, no, I'm not going to take the stuff you're jamming down my throat.
Right.
And I'll be curious what that's going to be this year to see what percentage of people, like, you know, I'm one of those, call us double haters or double negatives. I don't like either one of the candidates, and I'm not going to vote for either one.
Well, right now, if the election was today, I'm not voting for either one. Right. You know, Harris is going to have to show me in interviews, and she's finally doing an interview tonight, obviously, and she's doing it with Walls, and we'll get to that. But she's going to have to show me that she's moved closer to center left and actual answers as opposed to in Harris. But I'll give you a Trump thing where it's just so distasteful, and it's WCC radio, so I got to clean this up.
You are at the state fair, so you got a little bit of.
So yesterday, somebody shows a picture of Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton, and somebody, I don't know who they are, talks about oral sex in the two of them. Puts a tweet out there, or Truth Social about that. Donald Trump retweets it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times, most of our lives, that would have just been disqualified. That's just some idiot or somebody telling an off-color joke. This is a former president of the United States, and I'm not saying the Democrats are flawless. I just said, as of right now, I'm not voting for Harris. But my God, here is a person where the election really still is his to win. Because there's a lot of frustration with Biden-Harris. And when the Harris folks keep saying it's time for change, you're kind of like, wait a second, you're the vice president right now. But the fact that he's retweeting a disgusting comment about oral sex involving Harris and Hillary, and this guy might be president, grow up. Yeah, I mean, well, why is he doing this stuff?
Well, it's, and again, if assuming the purpose is that he wants to win, it's not what he should be doing, right? I mean, so,
but he's never going to change, right?
No, no, and he does. I mean, so that's, you know, you take the good with the bad. But in this case, for someone like me, I just find it extremely frustrating that you have, you know, you get some really good traditional conservatives running in Minnesota, and this is actually the most important election in Minnesota in the last 50 years in terms of state legislative races.
How come?
Well, that's because we've had 2 years of the Democrats in total control, right? And we used to have a debate in this state about whether we were a center-left or center-right state. This is the first time the Democrats are trying to make the case that we are a hard-left, far-left state. I mean, we had a huge budget surplus. They blew through it and raised taxes. They want to do more. And so this is a statement election. If the Democrats keep total control in Minnesota, they will say, with some degree of truth, that Minnesotans have validated.
Just affirmed what?
It's affirmed all the stuff that happened.
And right.
So this is a, you know, even though the governor's not on the ballot, as a governor, I should say, attorney general and stuff like that, these state house races are super important. And the thing that frustrates me is when Trump goes out and opens up his yap and says something stupid, it can cause damage down ballot for what is a really important election for Minnesota to restore balance back to the Minnesota governing philosophy. So that's what worries me the most.
Retired Representative Pat Garofalo is our guest. Let's talk, when we come back, a little more Tim Walz, because Pat obviously worked with him, worked against him as a representative, and also want to get to his new role as president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. Short pause. Chad Hartman here with you out of the State Fair on Newstalk 830 WCCO. Right back with Representative Pat Garofalo, the retired Pat Garofalo. Okay, Tim Walz. When Tim Walz, he'll be a part of the Dana Bash interview tonight with Walz and Harris. It's going to be Coach Walz. It's going to be rural Tim Walz. When you hear that part of the Tim Walz presentation, what do you say?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to be watching it. The Gophers home opener is on tonight, so I'll be watching.
You might catch some clips at some point.
Get some sound bites. I mean, I don't really think anything of it. As a Minnesotan, of course, I'm happy to see a Minnesotan be on the top of the ticket as a vice president. I think that's whenever the Midwest is represented, I think it's a good thing. But I don't think that the track record of what's been going on in Minnesota the last, you know, 6 to 10 years is something we should be bragging about. Just objectively, when you looked at measurements of success and achievement and support, things are going the wrong way on multiple levels. But it's interesting to come out here to the Minnesota State Fair. You look around at these booths and forget Sweet Martha's cookies or the mini donuts or the giant slide. The most talked about, most popular booth out here is the Never Walz booth.
Packed.
I mean, it's jam-packed, and it's interesting. It's, don't mistake that for a majority opinion, but if you're out here, you go take a look at that booth. The Never Walz booth is just it's brimmed and lines out into the street.
I would say that you're 100% right. I also would say if there was a Never Trump booth, that probably would be just as packed, though, right?
Yeah, I think we want
to get angry. So I asked you this before. Tim Pawlenty is on this show quite often.
Yeah.
And Tim keeps saying until your party, the Republican Party, changes its brand, that Tim Pawlenty talking, we're going to keep losing. What brand change do you think the Republican Party in the state of Minnesota should make to try to win more statewide races?
Well, I think the best way to do it is to look at, rather than just discounting everything Trump's believed and separating the style from the substance, I think that you have to recognize where this energy is coming from. And that is, there's a feeling among a lot of voters that government is not working on their concerns, that they're doing what is most interesting to their financial donors, they're doing what makes them popular in the media, that there's no one really championing the working class. And so I think Republicans will do a better job of focusing on the things that matter in people's lives. So in the state of Minnesota, what does that mean? Well, things are expensive. They're more expensive than they used to be. It's very real when you see inflation that's taking place. It's about addressing those concerns and addressing costs and recognizing the root cause of them, which is these are government-induced policies that are making those costs more expensive. On another level, childcare is too expensive for those who choose to work outside the home and they can't afford daycare. So having more having a re-regulation, responsible regulation, and lowering costs of those things while maintaining quality of care, that impacts people's lives. In the area of public safety, recentering around making sure that we have policies that are focused on preserving public safety, not sending money into the kitty of special interest groups. And that's, I mean, those are meat and potatoes, things that are impacting people in their real life. Get off Twitter, get off Facebook, and talk to people in the real world. And that's what we have to recognize, is that Minnesota is a center-left, center-right state, and a hard-left or hard-right agenda is not really in the best interest of the state.
Okay. With your new job as president of Minnesota Grocers Association, what were your thoughts when Vice President Harris came out in her one big economic speech and talked about price gouging, including your area?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, you have to understand, you know, why is she saying that? Is that, you know, people are upset about inflation, things going up in cost. It doesn't matter that grocery stores only have a 1.6% margin. She's not interested in informing the public. It's just that she and President Biden are primarily responsible for something that people are against. She's just looking to deflect and get attention elsewhere. So in terms
of inflation, though, was unavoidable after the pandemic. Is that fair?
Well, when you throw trillions of dollars at the economy and you turn up the government printing presses, no surprise.
Trump did that also.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the chief complaints for fiscal conservatives like me, who are we're screaming as much as we can to say, folks, we're borrowing $2 trillion a year. This is unsustainable and inflationary. You know, we can either address this in a responsible way, or the bond market is going to impose a solution on us. We better get our act together. But you're absolutely right that the COVID policies, of, in terms of throwing trillions of dollars at the economy, but then when Biden came into office, they spend more money.
And the last one was a mistake. I got about 40 seconds left. What do you think is going to change on the grocery side in pricing in the next couple of years?
Well, I think that as the economy continues to slow, there'll be less inflationary pressures. It's important to understand, though, your local grocers, the people who are selling you this, these are not big fat cats making tons of money in margins. They have very small margins, 1.6%. So I think just the best cure for high prices is high prices. And you're seeing those costs, you're seeing as the economy is resetting, inflationary expectations are coming down. That's what's going to fix it. But these gimmicks you're seeing from wage and price controls, they didn't work for the Egyptian pharaohs for salt. They're not going to work for food now.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
CBS and Susie Jones up next.